The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the Center of Oddity and the Supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spooktacular people. Welcome to this 529th episode of the History Goes Bump podcast, Ghost Tours for the Theater of the Mind. I am your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we have a location suggested by our listener, Amber Phillips. We're heading up to Canada and we're doing the city of Calgary.
Looking forward to it.
Have you ever been to Calgary?
I have not.
I have been there once. It was a very nice city. I enjoyed it. I was only there for a day, but it was cool.
I'm sure you whipped around and saw everything you could see.
Actually, I don't think I did. It was back at a time when I didn't really do that much. I was en route to go to another location. I think we were heading to Regina, Saskatchewan. So it was kind of just a pit stop.
Okay. I don't know what's wrong with you, but...
Anyway, there is a lot of haunted locations here, and we're going to bring a bunch of those to you. Before we get into that, we want to welcome into the spooktacular crew, Alexis, Alina, Sue, Jessica, Yvette, and Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for joining the spooktacular crew.
And now, this moment in oddity.
The moment in oddity was suggested by Chelsea Flowers. We always marvel at how many children couples often had years ago, although many times it was due to the expectation of losing some of their children in their younger years, sadly. One family near Jonesboro, Tennessee is on record from the 1950s as having the most male children in a family. The Harrisons had a total of 13 sons, which led to the marvel of this largely male family. What began their newsworthy recorded journey was that Mr. and Mrs. Emery Harrison suffered a fire that burned down their home. Their community rallied by supplying the needs of the large family. As a thank you to their community, Mr. Harrison sent a letter to their local press. The news editor saw the promising prospect of covering the story of this family. The editor's story of the 13 sons was sent to nationally syndicated news columns. This newly found popularity brought them to New York for a family photo that was taken in Times Square. Mrs. Harrison was given the Honor Mother of the Year Award, and the family even appeared on the original Tonight Show, as well as winning $3,200 on a game show. Later in 1959, the couple added a daughter as their 14th living child, whom they named Barbara Ann Harrison. Having a large number of children in a family can be unusual, but a family comprised of 13 sons certainly is odd.
Am I walking away from something I should be running away from? From The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson.
And now, this month in history.
In the month of March, on the 9th in 1454, Amerigo Vespucci was born in Florence, Italy. It was the height of the Renaissance, and he was born to a distinguished family with connections to the Medici dynasty. He was surrounded by the world of trade and maritime practices from the time he was young. This encouraged his pursuit in astronomy, mathematics, navigation, and foreign languages. Fed by his personal passion for discovering new locations, in his 40s, Vespucci accompanied a Spanish expedition as an astronomer and mapmaker. During the explorations, Vespucci charted the constellations and also recorded various flora and fauna, as well as indigenous tribes encountered. His many correspondences with friends and colleagues have become known as the Vespucci Letters. They were touted as dispelling the belief that Columbus had reached Asia during his voyages. In the year 1507, to honor Vespucci's discoveries and documentations, a German cartographer drew a map of a recently identified continent and labeled it Americus in honor of Amerigo Vespucci. This is said to be America's birth certificate.
The city of Calgary is gorgeous with the Canadian Rocky Mountains as its backdrop. The bustling city is the financial center of Western Canada. If you like rodeo, Calgary is your place, as the city hosts the largest stampede in the world, the Calgary Stampede. Calgary also hosts several haunted historic locations, from schools to homes to libraries to churches and so much more. Join us as we explore the history and haunts of Calgary.
Indigenous people settled the area that would become Calgary around 12,000 years ago, sometime after the last ice age. These were a nomadic people that led up to the Blackfoot or Siksika Nation. They're the first nation people the Europeans would have met when they came. The early nomadic people left behind their field stone medicine wheels, pictographs, and cairns. The fur trade brought the first Europeans by the late 18th century. Hunters and whiskey traders set up fortified posts, two of which include one near the present-day Glenmore Reservoir, and the other was named Fort Calgary. That second one was founded in 1876, and the name is Gaelic, meaning Bay Farm. I thought that was interesting that it had a Gaelic name.
Yeah.
The first settler named John Glenn had arrived in 1873. The railroad came in 1883, and Calgary was incorporated in 1884. Calgary was known as a thriving cattle town and later was important as a transportation center and developer of oil and natural gas reserves. Many historic locations from Calgary's earlier years still exist today, and several of them are reputedly haunted. And we're going to start off with that one that you wouldn't normally think. You don't think cowboys when you think Calgary. But the Calgary Stampede is huge, and it also apparently is haunted.
This is hard to believe, but the city didn't initially embrace the idea of the Calgary Stampede, and it had a very slow start. In 1884, the Calgary and District Agricultural Society formed in an effort to convince people, specifically farmers and ranchers, to move to the area. They hosted a fair and then bought land in 1889 along the Elbow River. They continued hosting exhibitions until 1895, when years of bad crops and other financial hardships forced the closure. A future prime minister named R.B. Bennett bought the property and later sold it to the city, so it could build a park they named in honor of Queen Victoria, Victoria Park. A new company, Western Pacific Exhibition Company, hosted an agricultural and industrial fair in 1899. The company would continue the tradition for years until the government of Canada took over in 1908, and they widely expanded the property, adding six new pavilions and a racetrack. With these additions came a rodeo that featured trick roping and horse races. If you have listened to episode 101, you heard us cover the Miller Brothers 101 Ranch and the Wild West show they hosted. One of their trick ropers was Guy Wiedick. He was part of that first exhibition hosted by Canada, and he came back in 1912 to convince local government officials that they needed to make the show more about the Wild West.
The government wasn't interested, but money talks. So Guy went about getting investors and convinced four businessmen to fund a new event. These men came to be known as the Big Four and were Pat Burns, George Lane, A.J. McLean, and A.E. Cross. A new rodeo arena was built on the exhibition grounds and hundreds of cowboys came to compete in front of a crowd of 100,000 in September of 1912.
My gosh.
I mean, 100,000 people
That's
traveling
huge.
In 1912. Yes.
Wow.
This was a huge success, but another event wasn't hosted until 1919. This too proved to be successful, but was just another one-off. Eventually, the rodeo event was combined with the other exhibitions in 1922 and formed under the new name Calgary Exhibition and Stampede. This new combined event was hosted the following year in 1923 with a huge parade and multiple events over a week. Locals were encouraged to dress in Western clothes, and the downtown businesses were decorated like the Wild West. And that was the start of the greatest outdoor show on earth that continues to today. This year's event in 2024 takes place from July 5th to the 14th. So get your tickets now. This totally reminds me. I used to go up to Cheyenne Frontier Days, and same kind of effect. The whole city gets into it. Pancake breakfast, rodeo, singing events, all kinds of great stuff. I love this stuff.
You would have really enjoyed the Norco rodeos that we had.
Oh, okay.
In California. They're a lot of fun too. The Calgary Stampede Grandstand, which is now called the GMC Stadium,
because all the stadiums are getting taken over by corporations and getting names on them,
was built in 1974 and could seat 17,000 people. During the construction, a worker was killed in an accident, and people claim that his spirit is at unrest here. There are claims that strange noises are heard, disembodied footsteps are heard, and his apparition has been seen. And next we have the Dean House.
And that's with an E on the end of it. The Dean House was built on the Fort Calgary site in 1906 for Captain Richard Burton Dean, for who it is named. The captain was not only the first resident of the house, but also an actor, a gardener, a Northwest Mounted Policeman, and magician. Dean was described as having a drooping mustache, pale complexion with cold eyes, and he had an acerbic tongue, which he used regularly against his superiors and politicians. They referred to him as a torment. He was the last serving Northwest Mounted Police Superintendent in Calgary. The Northwest Mounted Police established Fort Calgary at the confluence of the Bow and Elbow Rivers in 1875. Before that time, this had been a place of gathering and ceremony for the Blackfoot Confederacy, which includes 9 groups. The police signed Treaty 7 in 1877, with the Indigenous people believing that this would be a sharing arrangement. The Canadian government claimed that they had surrendered the land and began displacing the Indigenous groups.
Dean had moved his wife and 5 children to Canada in 1882 and initially was an inspector for the police, but he proved to be a very capable leader and was promoted to superintendent. He eventually got a post in Calgary where the house was built. 2 of his children died before his wife, who died in 1906, right when the house had been built. He remarried in 1908, and his second wife passed in 1914. After that, Dean left Calgary for England and eventually moved to Italy, where he died in 1930. The house was 2 stories with a large wraparound porch. The Grand Trunk Railway purchased the house in 1914 and moved it to a new location to serve as the office and station master's house so that it wouldn't be demolished. In 1929, the house was moved yet again across the Elbow River to where it sits today on 9th Avenue. The Dean House was pulled across the river by steam tractor on temporary pilings. We'll post a picture to Instagram. It's crazy, and even Popular Mechanics magazine called it an astounding feat of engineering. For many years, it served as a boarding house under the name Jasper Lodge. Alex Brotherton bought it and renamed it to Gaspy Lodge, which ran until the late 1960s. In the 1970s, the house became an art gallery called Dandelion Gallery. Today, it is a restaurant with gardens that was redeveloped and refurbished in 2015 by Fort Calgary Historic Preservation Society. Weddings are also hosted on the property.
Almost blows my mind how they used to just move these houses back in the day. It's like, I wouldn't even think about trying to move a house nowadays. We couldn't with ours because it's concrete block, but...
Right. It's really astonishing.
And they're these huge Victorian houses most of the time. It just blows my mind. There's a history of hauntings connected to the house, due in part to tragic events connected to the boarding house. A boarder fell down a staircase and died. A 14-year-old boy who lived there had epilepsy, and apparently after repeated bullying, he hanged himself in the attic. Roderick Umperville lived in the house in 1952 with his wife and children, and one day he lost control and stabbed and strangled his wife in front of their children. He then killed himself.
How terrible.
Yeah. Owner Alex Brotherton died in the house in 1968. Visitors to the house claim to smell cigar smoke, and they hear an antique piano play by itself. There's an old telephone in the museum that is no longer hooked up and doesn't even have any guts, and it will ring. Storage bins will have bloodstains appear that can't be washed off. I don't know exactly what that means, if it's just the lower part of their bodies are below like the floor level, and so you can't see bottom part of their legs, or if they're above the ground and you just can't see from the knees down. So I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Wasn't there something like that at the Exchange Hotel where the spirit seen going from the kitchen quarters into the main hotel? They only saw to a certain level.
And I think it was because the path had changed there.
It had an elevated walk, I believe, previously. And now it's just the ground.
Yes, I think you're right. It's kind of like the Roman legion or whatever that they see. I can't remember. I think it's in York, where they march through and they realize that the street used to be lower down. So that's why you only see the soldiers from the knee down. You can't see them, but that's because they're actually marching on where the road used to be.
Right.
The house came from a sacred place to the indigenous population, and the apparition of an indigenous man is seen wearing a long-sleeved shirt and vest with a long single braid in his hair. One woman who saw the spirit claimed that it told her she shouldn't be in the house because it was a sacred place. Next up, we have the Prince House.
The Prince House is located in Heritage Park, which is a village full of historical homes and a section set up like an old West town. The Prince House started at 4th Avenue and 2nd Street in the Eau Claire District. It was built by Peter Anthony Prince, who was born in Quebec in 1836 and learned the lumber business. He moved to America in 1866 and became a U.S. citizen, but returned to Canada in 1886, where he settled in Calgary. Prince became manager of the Eau Claire Bow River Lumber Company, but he had his hands in other things as well. He was a hydroelectricity magnate, and he obtained an exclusive contract to provide electricity to Calgary. Prince apparently fell while walking on an unlit sidewalk and decided things needed to change. He formed the Calgary Water Power Company in 1890, which harnesses power from the Bow River by building a dam. Prince also built a brewery, grain elevators, and a flour mill. He married 4 times, having 3 wives die before him. He passed away in 1925.
The Prince House was built in 1894 and was based on the design of a cottage from Connecticut that was featured in Scientific American in November 1893. The house was relocated to Heritage Park in 1967 after Prince's stepdaughter, Nora Whitlock, died in the house in 1965. So again, here we have a house just being moved. All 3 of Prince's wives who passed before him died in the house as well. The Prince House is said to be haunted, and more than likely by the wives. Peter's second wife was Emma Wallen, and she had tuberculosis, so she was confined to the 3rd floor of the house. Her spirit is said to be on the 3rd floor, which is an area closed off to visitors because the stairs leading up there are servant stairs, so they're narrow, steep, and dark. A lady dressed in a white, high-collared period dress has been seen in the nursery on the 2nd floor. The ghost wraps what looks like a baby in a blanket and then moves to sit in a chair in the corner where she rocks the baby. A security guard claimed that he saw lights turn on the 3rd floor, where there was no electricity. Another security guard watched as a window on the 3rd floor swung open and closed several times. He tried to get his guard dog to enter the house with him, and the dog froze up and wouldn't go in the house, and it had its tail between its legs. Staff have heard stomping of feet on the 2nd floor. This was posted to a forum on Bella Online in 2012. I first heard about this haunted house in Heritage Park Historical Village, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, on an episode of Celebrity Hauntings on the Biography Channel. Actor Drake Bell talked about his experience there while working on a movie with John Cusack. Drake Bell and a friend decided to check out the haunted house one day when they had some free time. They took a video camera with them and caught some interesting footage when they approached the empty house. The curtains on a 2nd floor window were flung open and stayed open for several seconds as if someone was peering out at them. A few nights later, John Cusack decided he wants to check out the house as well. A group of people, including John and Drake Bell, went with the caretaker of the home to see the Prince House. As the caretaker approached the house with his dog, the animal refused to go into the building. The caretaker decided to stay outside with his dog and told everyone else to go on in. Oh, sure. They walked up to the 2nd floor with their flashlights as there was no electricity inside the building. As they ascended to the 2nd floor, the mood and vibe changed. Drake went to the room where the curtain had lifted a few nights previously and claimed that it felt very spooky. Almost immediately, although there was no electricity in the house, all of the lights in the room turned on, even the gas lamps that were only in the room for show.
What in the world?
Yeah. Drake saw a woman dressed in colonial clothing standing in the room. He ran out of the room screaming, "Let's go!" And everyone followed him out of the house. The caretaker was standing outside waiting and showed them a picture of the house from the newspaper that clearly showed a woman standing in the second floor window. Although the house had been empty at the time, the picture was taken. What a weird story. And to happen to somebody like John Cusack.
That's not Drake as in Drake and Josh.
It sure is. And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Next up, we have the Calgary Zoo Bridge.
The 12th Street Calgary Zoo Bridge was built in 1908 to facilitate travel across the Bow River between the community of Inglewood and Memorial Drive. This was first used by horse and buggy, but before long, automobiles were traveling across the span. The bridge was deemed unsafe for vehicles and closed to only foot traffic in 2016. By 2017, the bridge had been removed. A horrible crime was committed under the bridge in July of 1946. A 6-year-old boy named Donnie Gross had been playing with friends in a park near the Calgary Zoo when they were approached by a man named Donald Sherman Staley. He asked the kids if he could play with them, and they said no since he was a stranger. He went away, but gave it another try the next day when Donnie was playing in the same park alone. Unfortunately, Donnie went with him under the zoo bridge and was sexually assaulted and stabbed 17 times before being dragged back to the park and left.
A tour guide for Calgary Ghost Tours says that she was hosting a tour when a 9-year-old boy on the tour asked if he could go play with a young boy he saw under the bridge who had a ball. She looked over at the bridge and saw no child. Employees at the security shack claim to have played with the ghost boy. They throw a ball when they hear a knock on the door and the ball comes back to them. They believe it is Donnie. Donnie did reveal himself to another boy who was visiting the zoo with his mother, and he told his mother that a little boy named Donnie asked him to come and play. People on the bridge would claim to hear a young boy calling for help, and some have even called emergency services, but no child is found. Just a horrible, tragic story.
Indeed.
Next up, we have Alexandra Center.
The new East Ward School was built in 1902 in Inglewood, Calgary. Inglewood is Calgary's oldest neighborhood. The school was designed by architect William Dodd in the classical revival style and is a long rectangular 3-story school of solid sandstone. A concrete block gymnasium was added in 1956. One of the first principals was William Eberhardt, who came to Calgary in 1910. He eventually became the founder and leader of the Alberta Social Credit Party and Premier of Alberta. The building served as a school until 1963 when it was closed. The school was converted into the Alexandra Center in the 1970s for use as a community center. A caretaker at the building was named Joe, and he was a troubled man. He hanged himself in a stairwell in the building, so people believe he haunts the location. A shadow figure is seen and disembodied footsteps are heard as though Joe is still making his rounds.
Next, we have the Souter House. The Souter residence is named for Robert Souter, who was a Quebec-born building contractor, politician, and businessman who lived from 1858 to 1938. The house was designed in the Queen Anne Revival style with large gables, a circular tower with turret, an octagonal corner tower, and was built in 1907. The house later became an isolation hospital for patients with infectious diseases and then a boarding house for railway staff and their families. Today it is medical offices. A young couple were one of those railway families that boarded at the house. The husband would jump into moving train cars as part of his job, and one day he slipped and died. His heartbroken wife died a short time later. The widow is said to haunt the house and appears as a shadow figure or as a full-bodied apparition in a long white dress with black curly hair standing on the third floor balcony. Next, we have St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church.
St. Andrew's started as a Presbyterian church and was built and designed in the Gothic Revival style. The church has an octagonal tower, with a tall open steeple on the corner and was made from brick, stone, and cast concrete. The north and west facades featured ornate exterior mosaics, and the interior had stained glass windows and carved woodwork. Most Presbyterian churches joined the United Church of Canada, but St. Andrew's resisted. The congregation eventually moved to Haysboro in 1961. In 1965, an Italian Catholic parish moved into the church. 20 years later, it became a Vietnamese Catholic church and was named St. Vincent Liem Catholic Church. Today, it is no longer Catholic and hosts the All Nations Full Gospel Church.
There was a single woman who was studying to become a teacher at a college with a strict morality clause in the 1910s. She fell in love with a young man who was sent over to France to fight in World War I. He was killed in battle there. Shortly after that, the young woman discovered she was pregnant, and she was thrown out of her college. Her family also rejected her, so she came to the church for help. The church wouldn't help her either, so a story claims that she climbed to the top of the bell tower and jumped. The bells were removed in the 1970s, but that doesn't stop parishioners and neighbors from hearing bells ringing sometimes. She's like, you will not have peace in this church.
Next, we have the Lougheed House. The Lougheed House is a grand sandstone prairie mansion that was built by James and Isabella Lougheed in 1891. James was a prominent lawyer, businessman, and senator. He would buy lots of real estate and build office buildings on the properties. James owned so much that at one time it was believed he was paying half the taxes in Calgary.
That's a lot of property.
It certainly is. Architect James R. Bowes designed the Lougheed House in the Victorian eclectic style, and it had an irregular roofline. They added to the house in 1907. The house had all the modern conveniences of the time, including indoor plumbing, electric lighting, hot and cold running water, and central heating. It featured stained glass windows and corner and rectangular towers. The Lougheeds furnished the house with Spanish mahogany and faux marble. They called the house Beaulieu, which means beautiful place in French. The home was a social hub for Calgary, and the family was very influential. In 1916, James was knighted and remains the only Albertan to have that honor. He died in 1925. Isabella's parents were Métis, which means they were of mixed Indigenous and Euro-American ancestry. She was a wonderful hostess and dubbed the Hostess of the New West, as she entertained dignitaries and royalty. She passed away in 1936.
The Lougheeds had 4 sons and 2 daughters. The Great Depression hit the heirs hard, and they had to decide between keeping their parents' beloved estate or their downtown properties. They chose the downtown properties, and Calgary seized Beaulieu, and everything was sold at public auction in 1938. The house was then turned into the Dominion Provincial Youth Employment Training Program. 80 women lived in the house as they learned nursing and housekeeping. During World War II, the house was used as a barracks for the Canadian Women's Army Corps. A blood donor clinic was established in the basement by the Canadian Red Cross. After the war, the house became a dormitory for returning servicewomen until they could find other housing, and in 1947, the Red Cross purchased the house and used it until the 1970s. In 1978, they moved out and the city took ownership of the house, and it fell into disrepair. The community joined forces with the Historical Society of Alberta to save the house in 1988. Through the 1990s, the house was restored, and the Lougheed House Conservation Society was created. Today, the house is open for tours and hosts exhibits.
There are people who claim to see a translucent couple dancing in the ballroom. Other visitors have seen an elderly woman in a period dress sitting at a front window looking outside. This was a place where Isabella liked to sit and watch the bustling Calgary streets outside. Up next, we have the historic City Hall.
The land where City Hall was built was donated by a resident in 1885. The first building was built from wood, but was demolished a few years later. Architect William M. Dodd designed the new City Hall in the Richardsonian Romanesque style, which was started in 1907 and completed in 1911. Financial and design issues plagued the project, and when residents wouldn't agree to provide additional funds, Alberta Building Company walked off the job. William Dodd was later fired and replaced by Hodgson and Bates. Funds were then provided, and when City Hall was done, it cost double the initial budget. Leave it to the government to spend a bunch of money on their building. There's a single clock tower with a Seth Thomas clock. The interior had highly ornamental cast iron staircases and skylit rotundas. City Hall doubled as a police station and city jail between 1911 and 1914 with 15 jail cells. The first prisoner was Charles Monroe, and shortly after, a woman named Kathleen Kitty Quinn arrived. Two prisoners died in their cells, William Morgan and J.W. Lewis. Today, the building is used as an office for the mayor, members of city council, and the municipal clerk.
Security officers and employees have claimed to see the specters of a man and a woman in the building. One employee ran from the building one night after seeing a ghost. Barbara Smith wrote Ghost Stories of Alberta and More Ghost Stories of Alberta, and she shared this from Don Moorberg, a city communications official, in the 1990s. The man may be a former prisoner who died years ago in the police lockup. The female ghost has been seen on the old stairs. We have no record of any female dying in the building. I've heard that she might be a former alderman's wife or perhaps a madam who had been locked up in the basement cells at one time.
Next, we have the Hose and Hound. This is located in Fire Station No. 3, which was built in 1906 and served the entire east area of the Elbow River until 1952. This is a red brick building with a distinctive protruding second-story oriel window. We love our oriel windows.
Yes, we do.
There are large rounded doorways trimmed with sandstone, and the roofline has metal trim inscribed with Fire Station No. 3. James Cappy Smart was the first fire chief in Calgary, and he worked out of this station part-time. Cappy was an eccentric guy who often picked fights with police chiefs, like this was some kind of one-upmanship. Cappy really liked exotic pets, Kelly, just like you. And one of these was a monkey. He loved that monkey, but after it bit a child, it had to be put down. The monkey spirit is said to haunt the former station, where it throws cans off shelves and messes around with the billiard table, cues, and balls. The restaurant claims that sometimes the dishwasher starts on its own, which makes us say that the monkey is welcome to hang out. If he's doing dishes, come on.
Come on.
Cappy's horse Lightning died in a fire, and it's thought to be haunting the station as well. As a matter of fact, several horses have been heard in the station. TJ Kastner was a bartender, and he told CTV News, I was sweeping up a little mess, and every time I'd go back to get the broom, it would be in a new spot. So I didn't really know what was going on. I just assumed it was the monkey because we always kind of do.
If the horses are indeed believed to be in there, my horse used to play with my broom.
Oh, could so be a may horse not be too. The monkey.
I mean, it wouldn't be set up upright. It wouldn't be leaning against something upright in a different spot. It would be on the ground. But He used to pick it up. My gelding would pick it up and swing it around. He wasn't afraid of anything like that.
Oh, very cool. Next, we have the Cross House.
We mentioned A.E. Cross earlier as one of the financiers of the Calgary Stampede. Cross was born and raised in Montreal, and he moved to Calgary in 1884. Cross moved into the Cross House in 1899, but the house was built in 1891 in the Queen Anne Revival style with a widow walk and gingerbread trim. This is a two-story frame house with sandstone foundation. The property covered 7 lots and featured a large lawn, gardens, and a 1937 outbuilding that was used as a garage. A.E. and his family hosted community events like polo matches and large dinner parties. While the Crosses lived there, they called it the brewery. The Cross family owned the property until 1973 when they donated the home to the City of Calgary for use by the Parks and Recreation Department and the Calgary Horticultural Society. The property downsized to 2 lots. The A.E. Cross Garden Cafe was opened in 1991 after a big renovation. Paul Rogalski and Oliver Reynaud took over the business in 2001, and they renamed it Rouge Restaurant, which is what it is today. The Cross family was struck with diphtheria, which killed 2 of their 3 children and almost killed A.E.'s wife, Helen.
Rogalski is the chef, and enough strange stuff has happened to convince him that ghosts are a thing. He watched pots and pans fly around in the kitchen, doors have opened and closed on their own, and things have gone missing. Mediums claim that the Cross's 3-year-old daughter, Nellie, haunts the location along with her mother, Helen, and father, A.E. People have seen Nellie sitting next to A.E. in front of the fireplace. Employees have heard boisterous laughter coming up from the basement, and the heavy freezer door shuts on its own, hopefully not while they're inside of it. Calgary Association of Paranormal Investigators, or CAPI, investigated the restaurant and they captured an EVP on a camera microphone that also captured a figure flying away. So it was like having multiple things happen together.
Nice.
I haven't seen the video or heard the EVP, but I'll just trust that it really is a thing. Next, we have the Rose and Crown Pub. We've heard a lot of Rose and Crowns. There's several of them, I think, over in England. And of course, we have the one here at Epcot.
Indeed. The Rose and Crown shut its doors permanently in January 2023, which is a bummer because it apparently is quite haunted. And for good reason. It used to be a funeral parlor. The first building to be on the lot occupied by the pub was built in 1902. In 1906, that building was either rebuilt or extended, and David and Dora Davidson moved into it with their three children. David died in 1921, and Dora passed in 1930. Their daughter Maud lived in the house until 1931, and then a man named Harvey S. Perkins bought the house and lived in it until 1935. The house was demolished, and a new building designed by Calgary architect D.S. McElroy was constructed. This opened as the Memorial Park Chapel Funeral Home, and it was one of the largest funeral homes in Calgary. The funeral home operated until 1984. The Rose and Crown Pub opened 3 years later.
Customers and employees have reported seeing shadow figures, being tapped on the shoulders, and interacting with three spirits, a lady in white, a little boy, and an older man. The lady in white is middle-aged and wearing a big, white, billowy dress. The little boy is thought to go back to the funeral home and was a member of the family who lived there as caretakers on the third floor. No one is sure how he passed, but he is often seen lurking downstairs near the furnace. He is the most often seen ghost. The elderly ghost is nondescript other than he is male.
Al Hunter was a bartender at the Rose and Crown for over 20 years. He found himself having several experiences that raised the hairs on the back of his neck. In the late 90s, a group had reserved an area on the second level for a party. A bunch of helium-filled balloons were brought in to decorate the room. Hunter was downstairs when he watched a balloon come down the stairs, drift past him, go down another set of stairs into the main bar, went back out, and then it went towards the kitchen. Hunter chased the balloon down and put it back upstairs in the room. The balloon did the same thing. Three more times.
When it does it more than once, this is not chance or an air draft or
right.
something
Just
of that nature.
Just leave the balloon alone. This, let it be.
This reminds me of that memorial of that viral video that went around for a child, and they had balloons at the front, and the mother was sitting in the front pew, and all of a sudden one of the balloons
came right to her
and sat right in front of her. It was like, there is no doubt that something paranormal is happening here.
Right.
A couple of women from the United Kingdom took a picture of themselves outside of the bar, and when they got home and developed the pictures, they were stunned to see that they captured what looked like the spectral image of a little boy standing next to them. It's an intriguing photo. It does look on its surface like there's something standing there, although the head would be a little bit oblong and kind of set back, so it didn't look like a normal little kid or whatever. And I can't help but be like, can I see the wall that you were standing in front of? Is there something about that wall that just makes it pareidolia
right.
look like a person standing there? So I wasn't convinced necessarily.
There are lots of great historic locations in Calgary to visit. Make sure you bring your cowboy boots and EMF detector. Are these places in Calgary haunted?
That is for you to decide.
I might have to head up to Calgary again. Lots of great stuff there. We'd love to have you head over to our website at historyghostbump.com. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that at historyghostbump@gmail.com. We did get an email from Emily. She said, "Hi, Diane and Kelly. In a recent episode, I was interested to hear you talk about keeping black tourmaline with you so you don't bring anything home with you after an investigation. I hadn't heard you talk about crystals before. I'm slowly becoming crystal curious and would like to know if you have any guidance for how to learn about it. I'm seeing a lot of resources, but no real consistent guides. Thank you for any help, and thank you for the podcast." Emily, I would actually recommend, I don't know if you're in our spooktacular crew, but maybe putting that question out there. Kelly and I are certainly not crystal experts. Janae McCabe in our group, I can definitely think of. I think there's a couple other people in there that would be a little bit more
well-versed
about that. Or if somebody wants to email us some resources that you may know that would help Emily learn a little bit more about crystals. The black tourmaline, I believe we'd heard it enough from other investigators and other people who are familiar with crystals and such that this was a good stone to have that you want to, in case you want to keep anything bad. It's almost like it absorbs the bad. That,
or repels it.
Yeah.
I don't know which, but.
And we've had enough experiences with it that, especially as we were talking about the
Charleston jail.
Jail in Charleston, that I think there's definitely something to that. It's also something, occasionally we'll put it on the headboard of our bed to help us sleep, but I haven't had it there for a really long time.
Maybe we should. We didn't sleep real great last night.
And maybe that's why we have been tossing and turning. I've been blaming it on a menopause and old age, but
hot flashes.
The need to pee three times in the night. Maybe it's actually bad spirits around us, Kelly. So hopefully that answers your question, Emily. We're certainly not experts on that kind of thing. Want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
This episode isn't brought to you by our executive producers.
Make Mort a happy boy and share the podcast.
Calgary also hosts several haunted...
Sounds like you're rewinding yourself. And that was the start of the greatest outdoor show...
Shore. Gotta give him a shower.
We're going to give you a shore. We're about to have a good shoe. That's how I should have said
really
it.
It's a really big shoe.
Yeah, if I wanted to say it properly. The house was then turned into the house was... Now I want some M&M's.
And I'm not too too.
Oh no, don't. Now I sound like I'm making a beat to go with it. Now don't.
Manamana doo 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 doo.
Don't.
Manamana doo 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 doo. We are nuts.
Yes, we are. It's too early for this.
Where's our straight jackets? He didn't put my straight jacket on me.
It's 8:30 in the morning. What in the world?
That's the problem. I've been up since 4:30.
Oh. And the Lougheed House, conservative, and the Lougheed. Lougheed. I can't do it like you did.
A little less.
And now we have the historic city hall.
Historic?
Is that what I said?
It sounded like it.
James Cappy Smith was the first fire chief.
I was smart turn to Smith.
Well, it's because I was concentrating on not calling him James Crappy.
James Crappy Smart. Smith. I mean Smart. Cappy. I mean Smith.
I was like, don't say crappy.
Oh, my word.